It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed on the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Larry. How are we doing today?
We are doing wonderful.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was thankful.
Thankful. Very good.
Yeah, enjoyed it. Ate too much, but...
Food coma.
Yeah, food coma. We'll get over it sooner or later.
Well, just a couple of weeks, we'll get to do it all again.
That's true. I'm looking forward to it. I love Christmas.
I do, too, actually.
Fabulous time.
And well prepared this year. Was out the Friday after Thanksgiving, getting the lights up on the house. Had nice warm weather. Got it all done, which is a first for me.
And you didn't fall off, so that's even better.
I'm still here.
Yeah.
I'm still here.
Good place.
Still
got to
get them down. So.
Still have to get them down.
But all in all, we are ready for Christmas. We're going to spend Saturday morning at Eckert, so we're looking forward to that. Go out on the Griswold family Christmas tree hunt.
I love going to Eckert. Fun place to go.
So, what are we going to talk about today besides what we're doing for Christmas?
Well, it seems to me that there is some new information. I think overstating the obvious to me, but nevertheless, it's news on the Department of Labor fiduciary rule. Now that there's been a little time with the new administration preparing
for... New administration? What happened?
Well,
did I miss
something?
We had an election?
You must have been out that day. I don't know. Or night or overnight, whatever it was.
Nope. We had talked about this on a previous show that, you know, depending on who got in, it would have an impact on what was going to happen going forward.
So we really don't know any more now than we did before. Other than Fred Riesch, who is a noted ERISA attorney in the country today, one of the top five or six probably.
Easily.
Came out with an article, which he's been blogging about since the rule was first released last April. And he did state the obvious. There's one of three possible outcomes that we're going to see with that. The first being the rule will continue and go into effect April 10th of 2017 with all of the appurtenances with it, the vice exception. Yeah, spell it.
Somebody had a dictionary for
prohibited transactions and related things for applying to advisors and to participants or employees of qualified plans and those who have an IRA. However, I agree with him. That's probably not what's going to happen. The second option was that it will go away altogether. I don't think that's going to happen either. And the third most likely is that the effective date will be postponed until at least the end of 2017, possibly into 2018.
So there were the three choices he said.
That's the three choices he said.
Maybe we could do a new segment. We could call it the Dick Tracy Badge Award.
Yeah, well, that would work.
So, I mean, that's it. Did he give any opinion on what he thought would happen?
His opinion was that it would get at least initially postponed until the end of the year or next year. I think he didn't say this, but I'd give that an 80% chance of possibility. And whether or not the new Secretary of Labor will amend, modify, or totally delete the rule, we will find out probably in February or March. And in that case, we really have to assume it's going into effect for all intents and purposes until it doesn't.
It is kind of a pickle. And I agree with, first of all, the Dick Tracy Badge Award, that there are only three possibilities that we could have. That's kind of overstating the obvious, like you said. However, I do agree that it will probably be delayed. That's really the only sensible outcome that will happen, because you're going to have a lot of clamoring from broker-dealers now that there's this opportunity to delay it, to go ahead and have it delayed because it's too cumbersome to get done by the deadline. And then you're going to have the new administration, the Republicans and so forth, clamoring that it needs to be delayed because it was a Democrat-initiated policy to begin with. However, I did read that article that you're referencing, and I did like, you know, after he gave the three obvious choices, looking at the two sides, saying, okay, what's the likelihood that it stays as is? And he kind of gave a pro and con on that. And what's the likelihood that it's completely abolished? And he gave a pro and con on those, and we can talk about those. But I think the only logical outcome that it's delayed, which is hard. It's hard for the industry because you have to prepare as if it's going to happen, knowing that it probably may not happen. And then if it does get delayed, we're back at square one again. We're back to where, I mean, we came so close, and then we're going to go back to where we were 24 months ago.
Back to the Wild West.
Well, not quite the Wild West.
Not quite. I know.
But we're definitely going to be back to what's the word I'm looking for? Well, limbo, ambiguity. And it's unfortunate for, you know, the investor.
Well, the investor and the representative, because I was at a meeting yesterday afternoon discussing what steps needed to be taken, and the only choices we have are to proceed as if it is going to go into effect, which means for, you know, the small to mid-sized broker-dealer waiting for the rest of the industry to figure out what type of paperwork we're going to need to satisfy the prohibited exemption rules, to satisfy the BICE exemption if you are falling under that, because we'll follow suit with some of the major players. But I was talking to another company, a major, one of the top companies in the country today, and they're expending hundreds of thousands of hours of programming time, of legal time, of research time, preparing for exactly how to regulate their particular agents or advisors, whichever you want to call them, and what they will be allowed to do, what they will not be allowed to do. And most of that is they're attempting to roll out before the end of the year, which as of today is not very long away. So it's a question of, you know, let's prepare for what we think is going to happen, even though it probably won't, and we won't know for a couple of months, but we're going to pretend it does anyway.
I've read a few articles talking about different companies, and they're just going to go ahead and move forward. And whether the rule is actually implemented or not, they're going to hold their advisors as if it was passed, just because they know at some point it's going to happen, so let's just get it done and over with. And I don't know if you've seen that or heard that from anyone, but that I could see that happening and being a logical approach to all this, because I think we're all kind of tired of this hanging out there.
Well, yeah, the hanging out there, as you and I discussed in our business model, John, we have always acted first, foremost, and only in the best interest of the client, the participant that we're working with. Any recommendation we make has to be in their best interest. So that doesn't change for us. What does change is the documentation that is going to have to go into proving, in essence, that we have acted in their best interest. And it's not enough to just say that we have, but it becomes much more cumbersome. I read another article yesterday put forth by the president CEO of MoneyGuide, one of the major software packages, and it's best known in the industry and the one that we use here when we work with clients. And he was quoted again as saying that the only way, and in his opinion, of course, the only way that an advisor can satisfy the best interest exemption, that they are acting on behalf of the client and only in their best interest, is now not only going to involve doing a risk tolerance. Up until now, you know, the brokers worked to a suitability standard. They did a risk tolerance quiz of, you name it, 6, 8, 10, 12, 20 questions, where the client answered those questions in kind of, well, if this happened, what would you do fashion, in an attempt to determine, are they a conservative, a moderate, or an aggressive investor at this point in time? That's not going to be enough anymore. You're going to have to dig into not only their aggressiveness in terms of risk tolerance in more detail, but basically into their life's history. So as an individual working with a professional financial planner, don't be offended at some of the questions we're going to have to ask, you know.
And I think that part is the biggest argument against the rule. It's not necessary, and you know, Fred brings it out in his piece. I have another piece here from NBC. I have another piece in front of me from the 401k specialist, and it's not necessarily acting in the best interest. I mean, again, we talked about this before. Almost everyone in this industry does that anyway. The few bad apples have spoiled it, but if you're in this business, you're working for your clients, and you're typically working for your client's best interest. There's a small percentage that have other motives, but again, that's a very small percentage. What I'm trying to get at is it's the documentation. It's proving that you're doing this. The pendulum has gone way too far. For us to have to sit down and ask a health history to do financial investing, that's just a little excessive, and it becomes harder and harder to defend your position, which I don't know if that's what the administration was looking for or an unintended consequence, but that's the biggest argument I'm getting is this is insane, the amount of paperwork and documentation and everything that you have to do to help someone invest in IRA.
Yeah, I chuckle because when you say it that way, John, it just makes me it's gotten ridiculous. I working with clients, I don't know, on some of my clients, you know, they don't necessarily, depending on, you know, are they baby boomers, are they Gen Xers or Ys or millennials, they don't want to reveal their entire life history. We were in an enrollment meeting yesterday, as you all know, mm-hmm. and the one individual we were talking, yeah, you were there. The one individual was asking, well, we were talking about life insurance, but it's going to apply to financial planning also, about the Medical Information Bureau, because the MIB, which has been around for years, most people don't even know it exists. That is the central depository for all medical information from
Big Brother,
from your doctors to your podiatrist to the pharmacy to anyone, the health insurers, you know, Blue Cross and the rest of them, Coventry, United Health.
There's a record of it.
If there's a record, it is sent to and deposited at the MIB. So it is your life's medical history.
And that's not Men in Black.
And it's not Men in Black. And, you know, the individual in the meeting asked, what all do they keep in terms of information? And we kind of scratched our head, not wanting to be too invasive, and basically said everything. And she's like, oh, really? And so I don't know what she was thinking, but nevertheless, that's the type of thing. And I'm used to asking those questions in terms of providing life insurance for a client or disability or long-term care insurance, as well as health insurance, which I don't do anymore by choice. But those kinds of questions, a medical history of the individual, medical history of their parents and grandparents, you know, was there a high incidence of cancer, or was there a high incidence of high blood pressure or some other type of ailment that can, and we found, be genetically transferred now, because that all goes into the underwriting. It's a term that we almost have to now apply to financial planning, the underwriting of the client as to if the individual has a history of cancer, and that particular type of cancer, which thank goodness is getting, you know, a little more under control today than it has been for years. But that particular type of cancer has a recurrence, a high probability of recurrence, and it's not likely that they'll live longer than, you know, 3 to 5 years. Then now the burden is put on us to make recommendations that are appropriate for somebody who's not going to live more than 3 to 5 years. And if we don't, then supposedly we're not acting in their best interest.
And if the person for some reason is the outlier and ends up living for 20 years, you're going to have to defend yourself. Well, why did you have me in such a conservative portfolio? Now my portfolio hasn't kept up with inflation. And that's, you know, and I didn't mean to sound real flip when I said, you know, we need to do this huge medical background to invest in IRA. You know, we certainly take everyone's investment seriously, but there is a point where when we are asking cancer questions to do an investment portfolio on maybe a small piece of someone's overall portfolio, it's a bit much. And the small investor, the person who doesn't have a lot of money, they may not be able to afford, you know, the fees that come with doing all that background work, because that's time that we're not doing other stuff, so we have to be paid for it. You know, it's a bit of a mess. I mean, I like the idea that You know, all advisors are going to be held to the same standard, and you know, we have to, everything we do has to be in the client's best interest. However, the documentation and paperwork that has come along with this is a nightmare.
And taken to the extreme, John, it's just sitting and thinking about it even more.
Don't.
What's yeah.
It hurts.
I try not to, believe me. What's going to happen when you're sitting down? And I have a couple of clients, not a lot, but a couple of clients who they want me to handle a specific piece of their investment portfolio. And maybe they have another advisor. They feel comfortable with handling the other piece. It may get to the point that if I'm not handling it all, or at least have access to the other advisor's portfolio to take into a full analysis of what the client wants, I may not be able to work with them, because without that information, I can't make a recommendation that I am confident is in their best interest, not knowing 100% of what they have invested and now extending to their health history as well as family issues. You know, if you have a blended family, you have stepchildren, you have adopted children, these are all factors which are going to come into play that I don't know how anyone can really come to a best interest standard and be able to defend it in a court of law.
Right. I mean, and there are plenty, I've had plenty of high net worth clients that they don't want their advisors knowing what the other advisor is doing. They have, you know, three buckets that they use, and you're going to handle this piece, this person's going to handle that piece, and this advisor is going to handle the third piece. And that's it. You know, you don't need to know what they're doing. They don't need to know what you're doing. And I'll evaluate it myself. Well, under this new rule, that client won't really be able to take that position, because if one of those pieces is an IRA, that advisor is going to have to know what's going on in the other portfolios, or like you said, you're going to have to walk away. And that's not what our business is intended to do, is to walk away from clients. We're there to help people.
Well, and the result of that is, especially with the small investor, is there it potentially could get to the point that the paperwork, the type of analysis that has to be done just to justify investing in an IRA becomes so onerous that there are no advisors that are going to be able or willing to do that. So they're going to be back at the robo-advisor, you know, plugging information in on a computer or online or talking to someone in India about their finances so that they can make a recommendation as to how to invest. And I don't think that's the intention of the rule either, but that is a possible outcome of what we're looking at.
Yeah, actions have consequences. And again, the government, as usual, has gone too far in one direction. And hopefully, you know, the new administration will see that. I like the idea of the DOL and the fiduciary rule. However, I think there could be some tweaks that can make it better. And having a more reasonable documentation process, less onerous, time-consuming, not that there doesn't need to be something, but certainly not what's being asked of and required now, and letting the investor have a little more say in the matter as opposed to having everything, all this forced on them as well.
Well, and the other side of that is that the government, the Department of Labor, basically has now proposed holding us to this standard of best interest, of acting not only in the best interest of the client, but being able to justify that. But they have given us no documentation or paperwork or outline that says you have to do these 5 things, 10 things, 20, 50 things. They just said, do it, and we'll let the courts decide.
Right, right.
And I have
that's a moving target.
Big problem with that.
Yeah, and that's going to be dependent on the judge that you're in front of that day and the mood that person's in. And
any attorneys.
And maybe the judge didn't like the fact that, you know, their IRA no longer has an advisor, and they got an axe to grind. I mean, it could be messy. So I think we're both in agreement. I think we're in agreement with.
We agree, John.
Well, it happens. That we're in agreement that, yes, it's a good concept. It's a good rule. But we could use some tweaking, and more than likely, of the three alternatives that could happen, the as is probably won't happen. You know, April 10th, 2017, this is in effect. The drop it, but we're going to redo everything from the beginning, I don't see that happening either. But I do see Because, I mean, the new administration is going to have a lot on their plate, and they're going to have a lot of other things going on. And if I were, you know, if I were president for a day, Larry, we'd get a lot of stuff done. But if I were president, I would want my team to review this and see what works, what doesn't work. And the only way that can happen is if it's delayed. And it could be delayed, you know, to the end of the year or delayed for another 12 months, which puts us at April 10th, 2018.
So did Fred have any pros or cons relating to that concept of delaying it?
No, what he did was he took a position on the two extremes. And, you know, as far as if you completely scrap it, that's not going to work because you're going to have a lot of baby boomers in retirement. They're going to have a lot of IRA accounts that need oversight and need something to be done. And then on the flip side is that the current system is working so well. Well, no, that's not true either. So, you know, the truth lies in the middle. And, you know, this is the situation we're at. The pendulum has swung way too far on the regulation side of this. So let's bring that back a little bit. And I think it will work just fine. I think the intention of the law can be met with what's required.
Yeah. In terms of working with a client, I think it's, I have a new client that was a call-in, a referral from another client and friends, which is the way we get most of our business.
That's the best kind.
And they're coming in next Wednesday. I haven't talked to them, but twice on the phone to schedule the appointment. And their comment was, well, I've had my portfolio with two different advisors. I'm not happy with what either one of them have done. You know, let's talk and find out what you can do. And that's where you really have to start, as I mentioned to them. You have to get to know your advisor. You have to get to know what their style is, what their feeling is about investing short-term, long-term, about how they discover information and take that into account, what type of software that they use in terms of planning. We've talked about this before, you know, applying a straight percentage rate on a portfolio and expecting it to perform in a similar fashion is unrealistic. It just doesn't work in a great majority of the cases. But using something like Money Guide Pro, that's not a promotion there because they're not paying me. But nevertheless, I do like the software. Using something that
I've been using it for years
has Monte Carlo simulations, which will give us a probability of success towards retirement goal and objective. There are a lot of variables when you get into it as far as long-term care planning, longevity, in terms of if somebody
can
lives
make me live longer
to 100, maybe, you know, living to 100 versus 80 is a big difference in terms of the portfolio. And conversely, I've had clients come in and say, you know, my parents were dead at 80, I'll probably die too, so let's not worry about living to 100. Well, that's not something I can do either. Because what if you do survive?
Yeah, what if you do have retirement at the end of your money?
Exactly. So it becomes a compromise, becomes a question and answer. Developing a proper portfolio, taking into account all of the what ifs, and those are the types of things that we can do and implement as part of the money, the planning package that we use.
So this is what usually happens to us when we get talking about something that we're passionate about. We get wrapped up in it, so we haven't talked about the coffee we're drinking.
That is correct, but it is very good coffee, and it is appropriate for the time frame. The name of the coffee we have today is Holiday Magic. It's not only available this time of year at the Chef Shop, of course, our sponsor for the show, and talking with Nancy and Scott. They begin the first day of the 12 Days of Christmas, and they are going crazy.
So, I can only imagine.
They will be with us after the first of the year to talk a little bit more about the retail industry and what they do and offer.
They're going to come in and visit with us?
They are going That'll to come visit with us. That will be fun. And they are a continuing sponsor, I'm happy to say, going into the new year. They will continue to support us. So thanks to them on that. It is the Chef Shop located at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025, in the Schnucks Plaza right next to Target. And back to the Holiday Magic. It's available year-round, both in regular and decaf.
The magic goes the whole year through.
Exactly. It's an exciting blend of Central and South American coffees, sure to please everyone, bright and complex. And it finishes with a smooth sweetness. I don't know that I got the sweetness, but it is smooth and it is a nice combination.
You're coming from someone who likes the frou-frou stuff. Well, so yeah. When you actually get an actual flavored, robust coffee, Your taste buds are used to all that frou-frou.
That is true. I freely admit that. But
well, at least you can be honest about it. Intellectual honesty is a good thing.
Absolutely. So Holiday Magic, go ahead and pick some up at the Chef Shop. And while you're there, take a look at the popcorns. I think they have 80 different popcorns now, John.
80.
So,
and that's what we're going to be reviewing next.
We are. So that'll take up pretty much all of 2017. And then some.
As long as they still like us.
As long as they still like us. But we like them a lot.
Well, that'll be fun.
That will be fun. We'll be talking about different popcorns. We'll slip a coffee in, especially our favorites here and there, to discuss as part of that.
I can handle that part.
So
with being a diabetic, I got to be careful with the popcorn. I can handle the cheesy, salty ones, but, the caramel and the chocolates and all that, you're going to probably have to do, which I'm sure you're reluctant to do.
It is a burden, John, but I will step up
take
and
it
I
for
will
the team.
Be happy to take it for the team and
well, you're a good man, Charlie
take
Brown.
Care of all of those. So our thanks to the Chef Shop for sponsoring us and supporting WSIE 88.7 FM, the sound here at the radio station. We do take questions. You can send them in to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. We'll be happy to answer those questions online as we talk to you every week coming from the studio on Saturday morning.
Is our website up and running yet?
Our website is about a day away from being online. So financialcafe.us, that's financialcafe.us. And what will we find out there, John?
We will find the podcast. I know we reference previous shows quite frequently when we're doing new shows. So you will be able to go out and pull up all of our previous shows, which time flies. We're getting close to 30 shows, I think, we've done. No, we're in the mid-20s now. So, yeah, it's been fun, but you can go out and get those. There will also be a calendar. Loosely, depending on, because we're going to try and have more guests come on and so forth in the future. But there will be a calendar of topics that will be coming forward. And our goal is to have, she wants 2 months of material out. So we're going to have 2 months of material loosely out there as far as what we'll be discussing. So you can look ahead and say, you know what, I want to listen to this show, or I got to make sure I can listen to the podcast of that show. This is a topic I'm interested in.
And that's one of the more common comments that I get from listeners is, well, the kids had a ball game, basketball now, or volleyball, or whatever it happens to be, soccer. Couldn't listen at 9 a.m. Where can I go to get it? So go to financialcafe.us. They will also be shortly on iTunes. Did you know that, John?
iTunes
will have all of our broadcasts out there.
Looney Tunes.
So, well, it may be called that.
ours will.
Maybe. So they will be out there on iTunes shortly, probably next week, in fact, and on a financialcafe.us, where you can see all the old shows. It is an education. If you go back to the beginning, the first show was about how to choose a financial advisor. And then from there on, you can pick the different topics, whether it's annuities or insurance, or the state-based retirement plans that we're so fond of.
I forget to get that one to be removed.
Yeah, loosely. So we have an opportunity to provide a little education at your leisure. Go out, listen to them. They're only 30 minutes long at this point, and I hope it will both answer some questions and maybe cause a few more, which, again, just send them in to us on email, and we will be happy to get to those and answer all of your questions on the air.
What is our topic for next week, Mr. Larry?
Our topic for next week is about Christmas shopping tips and budgeting.
Shopping. I love shopping now because I do it from the comfort of my kitchen table.
Well, Cyber Monday was the largest shopping day in history.
I can believe it.
And
I can't believe it. I can't remember the last time I was in a mall.
What's that?
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, coming to you from the studios of WSIE 88.7 FM, The Sound. Thanks again to Steve Jankowski, to Daryl McQuinn, our engineer in residence out here, helping us out every week when we're on the air, and to the university and anyone else who I forgot to thank.
And our opinions, of course, do not represent anyone else.
Exactly.
Well, have a great weekend, everybody.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at llexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private.
If I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
I'd be rich.
Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.